Welcome to Coffee Conversations with Stephen Hayward of Project X. This is a time where, hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're having some conversations with various people around the industry that might be of interest to you, our lovely listener. Hope you'll enjoy this episode of Coffee Conversations. I'd like to welcome to the 11th episode of the Coffee Conversations. I have with me Tim Dickey, account executive for Teradata, a division of NCR. He is one of our partners as well as our account executive on Teradata. So welcome, Tim.
Thanks.
So Tim and I have been kind of working together for the last just shy of a year because we have some mutual clients in concert, and Tim also has been helping us with our data warehousing as a service solution. So, you know, today we're going to talk about some interesting things. But before we kick it off, Tim has a new phone, and he was sharing with me a ring. So, Tim, you've got to play your fancy ring. Sorry, we're a bit quirky when we get together, so I just thought I'd share this. Well, looks like we're having some technical difficulties. The sound of silence.
I wasn't expecting that.
Let's say all the
I had silenced my phone so it wouldn't ring.
I know. What we'll do is we'll add it as a link on the blog so that people can hear it. But it was we were talking about this, the fact that every sound as a screen on in all the movies is based on some guy who recorded a scream ages and ages ago. So that was what. Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to work. Oh, well. It was fun. I guess we'll just sit and we'll start talking about what we're here to talk about. So, I think we're going to have some fun today because we're not going to be talking about a lot of the rhetoric, but Tim brought a couple of really good ideas to talk about today. And, you know, one of the things that Tim noticed on a lot of the discussions that we've talked about is how do you initially build one? An enterprise data warehouse, sorry, in context. All the stuff we're going to be talking about is data warehousing related and hopefully more on the business side. But we've been talking about just building that foundation from scratch and how that works. And one of the ideas you had was...
Oh, yes. Well, once you've built your platform, generally, you've got the base. You understand how to do your reporting, you understand how to leverage it to get information across the company, but there's an opportunity to extend that, and that's what we found with a lot of our customers on the Teradata platform who've built out their solutions. Over time, they've added quite a number of subject areas, quite a number of divisions, and that gives them a really good centralized base of data, and what you can do then is move up the continuum from reporting up to sort of an operational scenario. The exciting thing there is we see customers doing things like being able to supply that single view out to an operational source. For example, a telco is able to supply information to a call center all from one place that allows them to see the last trouble tickets that customer has had, what the customer has purchased at a store, for example, how many times they've called the call center, what they've looked at on the IVR solution, the interactive voice response, so that they can service the customer intelligently. If you've had six trouble tickets, it's unlikely you're going to want to purchase something over the phone. They're not going to necessarily suggest a different call.
Or you've got an opportunity that when they have a customer touch point, that you can actually proactively, as opposed to react and wait for the bad news and help the call center person have a script to be able to build upon it.
Yeah, and that takes it that much further, actually. The operationalizing gets that information to them. Taking it a step further is where we're going today, and that's where our CTO will actually be speaking at the Adastra Think Big conference later this week. And he'll be talking about trends in active data warehousing. And that's what we're getting to now, is being able to take action on this information to try and proactively manage that relationship with customers. Everybody wants to be considered uniquely by a company. Everybody wants them to know them like the old, like the guy at the corner store used to know you, right? So, you know, you can build traps now into these databases so that you can say, hey, if I've got a customer who's in my top profitability decile and he gets 3 drop calls this month, well, then we should automatically send him an email or an SMS message that says, you know, there seems to be a problem with your cell phone service. Perhaps you can bring your phone over to our stores. We can have a look at it. And yeah. While you're at it, maybe they can throw in a coupon so that they can, you know, make a purchase while they're there, make good use of the time. So,
well, some, you know, often, and it's just, this is just general business sense, often it's not necessarily that they're going to actually do an action of it, but it's the effort of making the activity to say, look, you know, we realize that you're having an issue, we are going to try and address it, we're not sure that we can because we're not even sure what the root cause of it is, but at least they're coming.
That's correct.
Some proactive activities.
Just, you're showing that you care. I mean, it doesn't even have to be, as you say, a coupon or something else. It could be, we know that service in your area hasn't been great, we're looking at putting a new tower in the area, and that alone can be enough to, you know, maybe stay them from switching to someone else, for example, or, you know, getting irate and wanting to drop all the other services you have with them since they're bundled.
Yeah. So, interesting, guys. I know at the Teradata user group we talked about active in the business stream, and there were some great examples. Now, they were generally looking at things like Walmart tying up all the flags in the U.S. post 9/11.
Yeah.
And things like that, and you know, those are great examples, but they're usually point examples as opposed to talking about all the evolution examples. But kind of what you're talking about here is as a build off of, okay, I've got my centralized enterprise data warehouse, and what's the added value of going to Active, which I think what you're talking about is bringing all the operational data stores, not necessarily source systems, and in some cases if you could, it'd be great, but source data structures are quite often proprietary to whatever that custom application is.
Well, there is an opportunity to bring that ODS information into the system, but this is even taking it from there. Hopefully, you've already got that ODS information in the system. The key part of the solution that we offer is that it doesn't really take much more processing power to be able to handle that operational level request. And the cool part about that is you don't have to go and build a whole new system. One of our customers that did a call center solution already had 85% of the data in their EDW. Instead of having to build a whole new point solution, invest in a lot of hardware, a lot of resources, a lot of risk, all we do is build the front end, stick it onto the warehouse that's there, and off you go.
Now, are you changing the nature of the information that's in the data warehouse then? So, you know, often with the historical data that goes into the EDW, you don't necessarily have full transactional detail. Are you then adding that transactional detail? So if you take toll data from a mobility carrier, you know, how much detailed data are you going to have already in the EDW versus not?
Well, that's entirely up to the client, of course, but they can have anywhere from summarized down to detail. The more detail you have, the more opportunity you have to leverage it in this operational environment.
Yeah. If you're going aggregate, then you're really not truly getting to real time.
No, and that's the challenge, right? Because you don't know what the problems of today are going to be, or the problems of tomorrow, I should say, rather, if you just build it for today.
Yeah.
Okay, so having that detail there does allow you that sort of freedom in trying to understand, you know, where you should be going tomorrow. And, you know, it's not necessarily the things that you think are obvious on these things either. Some of these sales opportunities, use a financial example. Overdrafts, you might think, okay, well, what does that tell you? Well, what it tells you is you've got a sales opportunity.
Yeah.
Some of the banks are leveraging that, and overdraft comes up. Well, instead of charging them that $5 for the overdraft, why not put them on the service that covers them for overdrafts for $2 a month? It's a small amount, but right away, it hasn't cost you anything to implement this other than setting up the triggers.
Yeah.
And instead of doing the $5, you're doing $24 a year, whatever, right?
But
and
even
then off you go.
Even as a call center opportunity, that whoever your bank manager is, if you're really, truly overdrafted, they actually call you, and here's a sales opportunity to say, well, why don't you pre-configure at least a couple of ideas that person can take so that when they do that customer touch point, they're adding value. I know that
absolutely.
You know, this stuff is all the real business good value of how do you change a customer contact into something truly positive. Because, I mean, you and I both know some of our best relationships come from when there's problems with our customers.
Absolutely.
It's the only time they really, truly get us and let us into and in a trusted environment to work it out.
Yep. And, I mean, just because it's a negative instance occurring at a customer doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a sales opportunity. Another example, one of our financial customers encountered a situation where one of their clients was removing a rather large sum of money from their account. And instead of taking that as a negative, they leveraged that trigger as an opportunity and called the client, found out that it was a lady whose nephew was getting married, and she was taking out the money to give them a down payment for a home. So what they did instead was helped her to put that into another instrument that they could leverage, and then managed to corner the mortgage for the nephew as part of the deal.
Yeah. So let's look at it, because one of the things you said kind of triggered on an interesting point, right? You mentioned it's a sales opportunity. It's not actually the best part. It's true sales. It's creating mutual value, right? So this customer touch point was, everything you do is at some level a sales opportunity, whether you're asking your significant other whether you can go play golf on the weekend or
yes,
or they're asking because they want to go and do a ladies' night at whatever yes. It is. Yeah. Everything is, but the ability to actually enrich that transaction.
Well, yes.
Because I'd be willing to bet that customer, that woman you talked about, is a raving fan now of that bank because of the fact that they changed it. And guess what? Nobody lost it in that example. Like, that was just a brilliant, brilliant thing.
Yes, and it's targeted, right? It's not so much that it's just a shot in the dark either. You know, like where some of them call you up and just offer you a particular offering because it's the choice of the month.
Well, I mean, how many calls do you get when you're already an Amex card holder? And you say, we'd like to offer you an Amex card. Well, what's wrong with the one I have? Oh, you're already an Amex, because it's not necessarily permission and request. I mean, the whole idea of blogging, as an example, we're coffee casting today, but is around the ability to let people ask.
Absolutely.
For the content, and here's an example of, well, we've done this, we just wanted to, and like the script in this case is extraordinarily important, like, because otherwise it's going to feel like you're infringing on their privacy.
Well, absolutely, and infringing on the privacy is always an issue, and I know all of our customers are very sensitive to that, and no one wants to be seen as digging into someone's private issues, but obviously, you have to do a transaction if you're a customer. And obviously, those are going to be tracked. And in my mind, it's a better opportunity for customer service. And I'll take that both as a vendor and as a client. You know, I want them to use my information.
Perfect. I mean, in that example that you talked about, it's just as much a call about possible fraud as it is about an opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And either one of those are absolutely brilliant.
Yep.
So, some of the other things that we talked about, I know you know about the interview I did with Howard Morton
yes.
over at Bell around,
yep.
Profitability. And, I mean, that's something that's kind of, we're kind of circling around. But
yes.
In retail, telco, and all these things, being able to figure out, well, actually, really, any industry.
Any industry where you can identify the client.
Yeah.
That's always the challenge.
Yeah.
And that's why the retail, financial, and telecommunications tend to come up first.
Yeah.
And you have to have a number of transactions. But, yeah, it is a real opportunity to understand your interactions with a client in a way that was not possible, not that long ago. And being able to do that is definitely a journey. I mean, while it sounds like a rather straightforward thing, revenue minus cost equals profit, anybody who's had any experience in any sort of enterprise of any scale understands the complexity of trying to bring that information together. I worked in finance and had to do that. It's a very challenging job. And then add to that you want it to be actually behavior-based, so that every time Stephen calls the call center, he gets nailed with the $10 charge that accompanies the cost of doing that. It becomes a significant data undertaking. But the opportunity to gain that understanding of your customer is, once again, much like the active scenario, information is power. If you can understand how you're interacting with them, well, then you can take that opportunity to treat them the way that they deserve.
So the question I have is, and as you know, we're all about innovating on the speed to market of getting people the solution or get the data into the customer's hand. So in the case of profitability, as you talked about, is really a very complex number. But no implementation, and even Howard said this, no implementation of profitability is finished, right? It's
nope.
Not. So it's better to even start getting some of those metrics than not having any of them.
Absolutely.
And then you can always involve the business rules around
Absolutely.
That. So I know with Teradata's profitability, that's the kind of engine that it leverages, isn't it?
Yes. And the idea is it's a metadata-based rules engine, okay? So you're not changing any code. It's basically entering in a bunch of business rules based on operands where you're saying, you know, here's my data elements. I want to divide that out based on service calls. So take that number of service calls and multiply it by X because that's the price of a service call. And as you say, it is very much an iterative solution where you start with a smaller number of rules and then build them up as you come to gain more detail as the data comes into your enterprise data warehouse or as you gain a better understanding of the components of your costs or your revenue. The key part of that is, you know, you're getting a more and more detailed solution, but even if you start with a more rudimentary one, it's all relative. So if you can understand where you stand, you know, if you decile the customers, you know these are your most profitable, these are your least profitable.
Yeah, I know we were asked to do some work at one of the telcos in Canada about figuring out profitability and location of their stores.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the basis of that calculation isn't that difficult. And they were doing it manually on a monthly and quarterly basis to, mm-hmm. you know, we just talked about putting some GIS information mm-hmm. together with census data mm-hmm. based on, you know, stuff you can buy off the shelf
yep.
and then mapping that over their
yep.
stuff. And then it was amazing how simple it was. But the problem was, all of a sudden, as you started doing this, then everybody wanted to create some very dramatic rules. And I said, look, how about we start off by having a really nice graphical user interface that makes it very easy, just like in a mobility kind of coverage map, where you can start having it proactively, as opposed to what they do is they go and say, thinking of putting a new store on the corner of Yonge and Eglinton, you know, what's my competitive situation? Is it a good thing? And what, you know, what kind of store should it be? Because there's like different models that they have. I said, how about we go and make it so that we actually create a nice kind of active solution that you'll have a map and then you look for the red spots, because red means there's an issue with it. Now click on it, now start drilling into it, because we're not going to be able to know all the answers. And if you want me to build this really fancy thing, then
it's true.
And as opposed to, so all I'm saying is don't worry about the green, maybe think about the yellow once you've addressed all the
yep.
red.
Yep.
And then use that to drill down and
yep.
kind of reverse it out, as opposed to, well, how about Yonge and Eglinton?
Yeah, well, that profitability can definitely change your outlook on how you're dealing with your customers. And frankly, I find what you're talking about is changing mindset and changing culture, and that's far more difficult than changing than building a solution. Even
so
as complicated as that is, as I've discussed already.
Well, so that's what I talked about, and that's why I like hearing what you said, is because if you go and say, look, right now we're not doing any of this stuff, why don't we build it, at least taking over some of the manual part to mm-hmm. allow us to be able to have our people who are pretty darn smart and understand our business to think it through.
Yep.
So let's, you know, in this case, you would have probably, we did a prototype of it, and I think you'd end up eliminating about 80% of geography from being, having to look at it.
Yep.
And then the other 20, you know, there was about 15% of that which were yellow and 5% which was red.
Oh, there you go. You can focus your work on where it belongs, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's a big, you know, that's another thing in looking at profitability. What also comes up is segmentation. And
yeah.
we find a lot of our customers segment based on revenue merely because revenue is available and it's easy to be obtained relative to other measures. And that's what everybody goes for. So once you've rearranged your data by looking at profitability, you can see that people that you've targeted, maybe in your top segment, may be losing you money. So you're putting good money after bad to try and maintain these customers, or worse yet, gain new ones that cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, and if you want to know a little more about that, when I interviewed Howard, as part of his presentation deck, he had a whole bunch of slides on that.
Absolutely.
And some other
absolutely,
stuff.
Yes.
So but, you know, and it is funny because, you know, if it's done right, it's just like this, you know, usually it's that 80-20 rule where you're going to go and you're identify, well, why?
Yep.
You know, do some real root cause analysis as to why is it, because maybe it's because the nature of the problem due to, you know, there was an example of someone that we knew that went and did a move, and he called before he did the move to make sure he had high speed available to him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got to his new house, it wasn't available. So the guy was calling all the time. So he would look like a very unprofitable customer. It was never that he was unprofitable.
Well, and you know, once
he was actually, but it wasn't because of him. It was because of
the interactions with the customer. Remember that anytime you're using profitability, you're not measuring the customer; you're measuring yourself and how you deal with that customer. You know, so that it you have to be careful with it that way, because it doesn't say, well, this customer's terrible, we should get rid of them. What it does tell you is, whoa, wait a minute, where are we seeing problems? Let's look into those problems. What are those costs? Are those costs his fault or our fault?
Yeah.
And then how do we deal with those to make them, to improve the relationship that we're having?
Well,
with
end of last summer, you guys did a really good webinar where you had one of the Canadian banks talk about their implementation of this.
Yep.
And it was a really good thing. I mean, feel free to go to the Teradata website and pull it up. We won't talk
it's
about
on
it
there.
Today.
Yeah, it's on there. If you look under profitability, it'll come up as a webinar.
And it's just a great example of how it changed their whole mindset and came up with a better way to embrace it. And so it wasn't really around, say, getting rid of unprofitable customers, which a lot of people think it's about.
No.
It's about how to move people into that profitability.
Well, yeah, it's about how to improve the relationship that you have with them so that you can better that that loyalty and at the same time serve them as best you can.
So one of the other things I wanted to make sure we talked about today was in the area of, you know, when you're trying to figure out how to move someone into a centralized enterprise data warehouse and they've got the mindset of data marts are cheap and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know Graham and I are always trying to figure out financial calculations to figure out how to say why is centralized cheaper.
Yes.
It's largely when you get into a company, it's nefarious because they may have an enterprise license of Oracle, and so that looks and appears to be
mm-hmm.
free, and then people forget, well, if I put a server on a floor, it actually is pretty expensive, and we actually ended up trying to come up with a cost per table, a cost per moving data, and all that other stuff, and it's a fairly complex thing, and that you're constantly talking to folks about, clearly you would like them to be on the Teradata platform.
Of course.
You believe in it, and it's also a great solution. But around, it's not like people are sitting there with an empty hole in their IT enterprise architecture that, you know, you're just going to plug. It's around how do you evolve them to that?
Yes.
You know, what's the mindset or the approach to be able to understand that kind of an issue?
Yeah, well, like you said, I do spend a lot of time talking to clients about this, and first of all, the thing that I find interesting is after having done this for 8 years, sincerest form of flattery is imitation, and it's nice that our competition are finally telling our customers the right thing and that they should be putting it all in one place. I'll give them that bit.
Yeah, it was pretty funny at the end of last summer when all of a sudden IBM and Oracle came out and moved the data warehouse inside. And even
it's terrific. I'm glad that they're actually saying that. That
and
is
even
the right
Oracle's
thing to do.
Moving the sources inside. I don't think IBM's messaging is yet source inside, but it won't be long.
Well, I can't speak to them, but I'm glad that it's moving in that direction.
Because I follow those things pretty closely.
Well, that's fine. But we do find that a lot. And I mean, a lot of this is driven by having a rather solid corporate sponsor who can understand the value of this. The challenge is always going to be a political one. The technical issue is never the problem with our particular solution. The challenge is always aligning all of the sun, the moon, and the stars to make it happen.
Well, there's also a little bit of a belief, whether it's true or not, and I don't want to around it, that they'll look at Teradata as being a little more expensive, but then, in comparison to what and how do you set that baseline is fairly vague.
Yes, and, some of our clients now have started looking at bringing in outside clients or outside organizations to do benchmarks and understand it,
mm-hmm.
and we win a lot of those.
Well, we did one for a client last summer.
Yep.
And you guys won.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean,
And the challenge there is always performance is part of it. Finding a lot of other platforms tend to require duplication of data. While we'll make an they may make an argument that you can have everything in one place, when it comes time to have more and more people hitting the actual system to utilize that data in one place,
mm-hmm.
Sooner or later you need to add horsepower. It's the same as our system. It's the same with everybody else's. The issue
so
is
there's no free lunch.
No, absolutely. But adding nodes to our system always provides a straight line increment of scalability. So you make your system twice as big as twice as fast. That's not the case with a lot of the other platforms. And so the issue there is you have raising costs as you make the system larger and larger, okay? So that gets to be an issue.
Yeah, the backside to that is that it means that configuring it can be a complex exercise. There's no one size fits all. Here, let me give you two nodes with this many disk in them. Now you've got your 2 terabytes. Go off and play. You can do 6 terabytes on 2 nodes. Or
absolutely.
Whatever
suits your needs, you can do that. But the nice thing is, though, that if you, all else being the same, if you double the size of the system, you can have twice the performance, and that's, nobody else can do that right now. Now, the other key of this is that when that performance issue comes to bear, what happens is the data gets duplicated in a lot of places, and it's not always obvious where that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you say, you get in enterprise licenses and things appear free. I can see why that's exciting to somebody who's trying to build their own little solution off in a corner somewhere. But sooner or later, it comes time to make that an enterprise-type solution, and it makes sense to leverage that data for the benefit of the entire company. And that's why I say it's key to have the buy-in of the higher levels of the organization, not even just on the IT side, but on the business side. Because somebody has to make everybody play fair. Everybody wants to own their data, but everybody wants to use everybody else's data.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some rules in place. You know? And without that, you're not going to be able to leverage that benefit. But so now, you know, if you're looking at how can you benefit by having that central data store, well, like I said, you've got performance right away. You can look at having much better performance on a platform. It's in the centralized location, and it's consistent. It's knowable, right? It's easy enough to calculate how that's going to be. You can remove data duplication, and that not only saves you costs on hardware and software and all the ongoing support and all the database
people
administration
support,
that goes with all of that, and all the people work and ETL feeds and everything else,
and then
that would be duplicated.
That subtle ETL one that you just kind of mentioned,
yes,
quite often can be a disastrous effect in terms of both short-term and long-term cost, in that once again you've taken a piece of data and you've changed it.
Yes.
You know, because when that person created that little data mart, they were using it for their purpose, and it had its own thing, and somewhere down the road, someone else is going to see that data is there and think that they can get their answer from there and build some decision-making off it, where you don't necessarily know all that traceability as to where it is. And that's the story about centralization, but that's a direct cost. Now, how do you monetize that? I don't know.
Yeah, and the challenge is always trying to qualify these things. I don't think most people would argue with you that there is a cost savings involved. It can be difficult, in fairness, to quantify that. We do have business improvement models, as do other vendors and other consultants who can take a look at this stuff and try and help you understand, based on what you're really experiencing, you know, what those costs might be. To take it a step further, the cost of having that data duplicated around the organization are many. You're spending time because of data latency or data inconsistency, as you say, once the definition of data, in arguing whose number's right. And, you know, someone who's an analyst shouldn't be spending time arguing with what's right. They should be arguing what steps to take based on that business data so that you can improve your own company's
bottom
line.
Well, it's funny, you know, we do business with, you know, in retail, one of the top 5 retailers in Canada, and in telco, one of the top 5 telcos in Canada. And I've asked both sides of their customer insight group how they get the answers and are they happy with them. And independently, when we were talking about this, and even with the retailer that we don't even do business with right now, last week, they all talked about the fact that they'll ask the question of their insight team and quite often get multiple different answers back.
Yep.
And none of them are truly wrong.
No.
But none of them are truly correct either, and you know.
And that's where, you know, part of this too. I mean, you could do a whole other coffee conversation on metadata, and you could do a whole other coffee conversation on how you decide, you know, data governance, you know, and system governance. Who decides what the definition is? And that's where you have to get all the parties in the room and hammer it out.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes easier said than done, but you know, I've seen it in some instances with some other applications we deal with, done to great effect.
And the hard part
commitment from the executive, once again, to get you there.
And that's the real key there, right? I mean, and it's also communication and the right communication protocol, because a governance and stewardship role, and we've taken that on in 2 different companies, and, you know, it's not like architecture has this budget that they can go pull from to say, this is what, you need to do it right, and before you couldn't, or whatever. They don't have money to pull upon. It's a very challenging sort of thing. So you need the right communication, and in a lot of cases, it's really more about that governance group with the guidelines,
yep,
or guiding principles that they have, to be able to know how to work those within the business.
Yeah, and I think the opportunity that arises with this stuff is when executives are upset because they can't get reporting that they want that's consistent or tells them what they want to know. I think that's where you have to take the opportunity to try and help them understand what all goes behind that. Obviously, you have to balance that off with realism. You can't have everything absolutely perfect, but on the other hand, if you don't have some sort of understanding from them that there is some underlying work slash plumbing slash rules that need to take place, they're never going to get where they want to be, and they'll just always be upset.
Yeah, like, you know, with our working data store model and how you can leverage that as a great,
mm-hmm,
how do you do the migration from a different platform into the enterprise data warehouse? It's all the same sort of thing, right? It's around communication, and yes, we're going to move it over, no, it's not final form, yes, we know there's still another 6 months left of changing that into the right format within it, but at least, as you say, you haven't told the business that what they could do yesterday they can't do today.
That's right, and you always have to do things incrementally. You're never going to be able to build the whole thing from the ground up. That's something that's become obvious with data warehousing, unless someone's got a massive budget, or unless you're as fortunate as some of our clients to the south who are startups who are very large internet companies, then you may have an opportunity to build from the ground up. In most of our clients, in the areas we deal in, that's not going to be possible because they're companies that have been around for decades, in some cases hundreds of years. And it's going to take time.
You know what, in all fairness, I'm not sure it's the right way. I'm not sure Big Bang is the right way anymore. You know what, I mean,
well, if a lot of the stuff is there, why not leverage what you have? It only makes sense to do that.
And that's what I mean, the main reason that we got pulled into largely all the stuff we do is on Teradata, because you can deal with the disparate forms that the data's in. Yes, it will always perform better in third normal form. Yes, it will always do this. Yes, but you want to create a nice, scalable working model to be able to work with data and not overly duplicate it, and be able to do that all on the same platform without having to create things for performance. And we're testing out Netezza now, and we don't see any other platform that can do it like Teradata.
Well, as you know, tying everything you said together, I mean, it's all about the business, right? And
yep.
The solution we have has been built around being able to help the business, and the data model being in third normal form is a key part of that, right? You can build data models however, like, we can handle the other data models, but those are all technology based.
Yep.
We believe in a business based solution, and that's why the data model is the way it is.
Well,
it's not the ultimate data model, it's the ultimate business model.
If you buy the retail data model, guess what you get out of it that has nothing to do with the data model? You get all the key performance indicators that are standard business,
yes,
for retail. Same thing for telco, same,
yes,
thing for
we
manufacturing.
Have, yeah.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are best in class.
Well, and, you know, one of the keys there is, you know, we're a 125-year-old startup company. We've been in retail for 125 years. So those key performance indicators and those business questions come from a lot of experience, and that spreads across to financial, communications, travel, manufacturing. And the goodness there is that all of the things we've learned in the other industries are shared across the models. And it's all about the business portion of those models.
Yeah. Well, Tim, I appreciate you taking the time today. I know we've been talking about this for a while, and I was going to actually corner you at the Teradata user group meeting, but you ended up having to go do some internal meetings at the end. But I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for today's episode of Coffee Conversations, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
For more information about Project X, please join us at www.pxltd.ca or hop on our blog at pxltd.typepad.com, and look forward to seeing you on our next episode. This is a copyright of Project X Limited.